Get the cheddar broccoli soup bowl.
You know what I find? Because after about the third bite into the side, it just rolls down the front of my shirt. Data Centric Podcast with Steve McDowell, Matt Kimball.
You're Steve McDowell.
Senior OIM, Senior Technology Analyst for some analyst firm in Austin, Texas. And Maddie.
In Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, dude. Come on.
At Chapel Hill, thanks. I'm just back from NetApp Insight, where you were not. This is my first trip to Vegas this year. Well, it's my seventh trip to Vegas this year, probably, but my first without you.
I know. I'm a little bit sad, man.
I was a little bit sad. Yeah.
I felt it. I felt the sadness. And was it? But you had more fun without me, right?
Oh, hell's yeah. Yeah.
Hey, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go for
it. Did you make your way over to the Venetian to go to the Grand Lux Cafe for breakfast?
My wife asked me the same question. No. No, they actually had really nice press and analyst breakfast at the conference, the NetApp Insight guys and Hotwire Global PR, my new best friends.
Right on. Oh, wow. Is that a paid-for plug that you just threw in there?
I'm hoping some of their PR guys will help me off the books and increase my Twitter follower count. NetApp was not my first stop. I've been on the road a week. I started off last week, and we're not going to have time to talk about it today, but we should talk about it at some point. I went to Fujifilm has an executive IT conference that was extremely interesting. They bring speakers in talking about archive, which sounds like a dry, boring subject, but when you get the chief archivist from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, talking about weather satellites and hundreds of petabytes of data, it's enthralling, man.
You know what? I got goosebumps just listening.
I'm actually trying really hard to get this NOAA guy to come on our podcast because you're being facetious, but it is extremely fascinating problem space.
No, it would be. It would be interesting. You're very dry.
Yeah, this guy has roomfuls of tape robots and a couple of locations and service level agreements and blah, blah, blah. My takeaway, it's sponsored by Fujifilm. So the theme here is let's keep tape relevant with the recognition that you would not believe the amount of money in tape.
No, I know.
But the backup and recovery are largely tapeless operations. Mm-hmm. It's really a managed archive. And they had two interesting speakers. Well, apart from the NOAA guy, they had two interesting speakers. And the fact that they got them there, I think, speaks volumes to how much tape is being used by the hyperscalers. They flew in a guy from Microsoft Azure and a guy from AWS, both of whom refused to answer questions about exactly how they use tape. But they talked a lot about SLAs around archives. And if you go look at how AWS uses S3 and cold storage and this and that, you start to get some idea, right, of what lives where. Uh-huh. These guys are buying a lot of tape, but that's not why we're here. We're here to talk about NetApp.
We are here to talk about NetApp.
Oh, before the other thing I did last week, Micron unexpectedly came into the 3D Crosspoint game, giving Intel some competition, leapfrogging them using some Gen 2 technology that they're going to be alone in the market with until Intel ships their. I'm trying to remember the name of it, Alder Pass SSD sometime next year.
So you say unexpectedly. Was it really unexpected to you?
Yeah, it was because Micron and Intel have both, they started 3D Crosspoint together, yeah. And then there was a little divorce. Micron largely owns the fabs. They've been selling their production output back to Intel. Mm-hmm. The perception in the analyst community, and nobody releases hard numbers here, is that by and large, Optane has been a loss leader for Intel, especially in the persistent memory space.
Yeah.
But it's starting to find good application as people understand that Optane SSDs belong kind of a cache layer. I think we all expected Micron to sit out a little bit longer while Intel continued to make the market, Let the big guy make the market and before they jump in. So what this tells me is, there's enough of a market, there's enough margin because Micron doesn't have loss leader anything.
Yeah.
And probably more importantly is they're using this Gen 2 technology, which is 3x faster than when Intel shipping 3x, Matt, on SSD. That tells me that the yields are working out favorably, right? So good move.
Yeah.
Happy to see it.
I get you.
But again, I've tried now three times, and you keep interrupting, asking me to talk about where I've been.
I didn't interrupt you at all.
We're at NetApp. We're at NetApp Insight. Where there are lots of announcements. You can go Google on their website. But the overarching theme of the conference was really around simplicity.
Yeah.
Simplicity and, two things. They introduced this concept called Keystone, which is, from a product perspective, Keystone really feels like it's an integrated portal to manage my stuff on-prem or on cloud or on demand, right? They use the word a little more as an adjective in private sessions where we talk about Keystone as simplicity of experience for our customers, right? We've heard that it's a little hard to buy our stuff, especially if we're kind of crossing boundaries. Let's give our customers a single point of entry to buy whatever it is we sell that they need, right?
Okay.
Essentially dumbing it down.
Okay.
But the other is Data Fabric, which is we're a company that spans on-prem to cloud. And in the cloud space, they bought a company a year ago called StackPoint, which is a Kubernetes company. And they very quickly turned that into NetApp Kubernetes Service. They don't talk a lot about it. They sell it. This year, they really started talking about how we integrate that. And they talked more about that in private conversations than public ones, but it's clearly a part of their strategy, right? So we have a couple of guests. Not talking about boring old storage arrays, but talking about what's going on in cloud native, including Kubernetes, and then also what's going on over in their HCI space. If you recall, they announced their HCI stuff maybe 2 years ago, came out their SolidFire acquisition.
Yeah.
They got a little bit of blowback from the industry because they're hyper-converged. You know, it's really not hyper-converged. It looks more like converged infrastructure where there's some kind of scales independent.
Yeah.
We talked to their chief architect and he laid out a really compelling vision for how to think about hyperconverged, how NetApp thinks about hyperconverged and kind of how the architecture, that you choose makes sense or doesn't make sense. But his name is Adam Carter. He's chief architect for NetApp HCI. And I'm going to jump over unless you have something to say. And let our listener listen to Adam.
Let's let Adam take it away.
So I'm the chief architect for NetApp's HCI solution. I ended up working on that after the SolidFire acquisition. That's kind of my history, was working at SolidFire on products.
How long were you at SolidFire?
Since the very beginning, 2011. So I spent a lot of time there working on, you know, scale-out architecture, really focused on service providers. And then after joining NetApp, I was refocused entirely into HCI, mostly because of the background in scale-out, right? HCI systems are scale-out architectures. So I worked on building our HCI platform. And now I look out for a lot of its longer-term future. Well,
some people's HCI are scale-out platforms.
Yeah.
Traditionally, I think we thought about HCI as an appliance where, you know, you put some number of components together, put it in a box, and call it a day.
Yep.
And then the way you scaled was you would add another box to some equal number of components. NetApp takes a little bit different approach.
Yeah, we definitely took a little bit different of approach. We have such a deep history in doing large-scale enterprise environments and a lot of demands on us to do much higher performance than I think a lot of systems are capable of, and we focused on that more historically, and we definitely wanted to keep a lot of that strength, right? So in our HCI system, we kept the components tied together in a way that, to me, delivered the things that I thought were important about HCI. To me, it wasn't so much exactly how you tied together storage and compute. It was more about how easy is it to buy it? How easy is it to deploy it? What's the management look like? How much can you make it a seamless experience for the customer? I cared more about those things, and I looked at the storage and compute and said, you know, really, those are better off having their components dedicated to them for scale and speed. And that means that we can scale them independently, right? We don't have to have, you know, if our customers end up utilizing more compute than they use storage, they can add more compute and they don't have to buy storage from us, right? And if they use more storage and compute, fine. It also meant a lot of flexibility about how we attach to current environments, right? Like ours is unique in that you can connect other like non-HCI applications directly to our HCI system and leverage it for bare metal use cases and other things that customers are doing. They can attach it to their current environments. You know, if they were doing something like a CI system before, which a lot of customers, they were doing CI and then HCI was kind of like the next best thing. Our HCI system connects right up and can live alongside our CI systems and be a natural extension to them. And those are some pretty unique capabilities we got out of that approach that we took.
It's interesting that you start by saying, I care about the ease of purchasing as much as I care about the ease of deployment.
But yeah.
Really, I mean, the value prop of HCI for IT guy is it's simple, mm-hmm. right? And I want a simple, seamless, unified, you know, management experience, independent of what might be happening on the data.
Yep.
Plans. And HCI and CI begin to blur a little bit.
They do. If you really got me into a debate about it, I think the lines between CI and HCI get really, really blurry if the management experience is the same, right? If you really did as good of a job about how easy it is to purchase, deploy, design, then those lines get even blurrier. But I think HCI systems really set a new bar for that, better than most CI systems did. And about the simplicity, one thing that I think is really important is we focus a lot, especially as technologists, on user interfaces, APIs, automation, and we talk about parts of the product, so to speak, that are simplified, and that's important. I don't mean to downplay that at all, but I think it's just as important what does a quote look like? What is support structured like? How many different ways can I buy this, et cetera? And you see a lot of the effort that surrounds things we've done with our HCI and other products, a lot of it coming out in Keystone at this event, that kind of wrapping it all around. There's this bigger story of how can we simplify things for our customers that isn't just about the products. Both sides matter, and the better job we can do to make it easy to do all aspects of the product lifecycle, the happier our customers are going to be.
Well, I get it, right? I mean, we're living in an age where we're, as consumers, we expect kind of the Amazon Prime experience.
Right.
Let's push a button, Let's get what we want. And then in the IT world, it's still, in many aspects, I mean, it's almost like being in the government, right? The levels of procurement and bids and RFPs and RFQs. And sometimes I just want to push a button and get some compute and storage, right?
Just get
my project done.
I mean, heaven forbid I know exactly what node I need to add more compute to my system, and I don't have to talk to somebody. I'd love to click a button.
Yeah.
And it show up, and I click one more button, and I'm done.
So I know you're an engineer, but tell me, where do you see your customers deploying your HCI? What kind of use cases? And is there maybe a hot spot in terms of workloads?
Or where I see ours getting deployed the most is environments where people are trying to consolidate many applications, right? One of the things that I think comes from our choices in architecture and how we designed our HCI is that it's really good at being a system that you're going to take multiple applications that might be very different, some that need a bunch of storage and are slow, some that are super fast databases that you generally wouldn't think to put on maybe an HCI solution. We're great at taking many of those and putting them into our solution. So a consolidation of many applications is usually where we see ours going into. And where we see a lot of opportunity and advancement coming in our HCI and where we're focusing on the future in our HCI is really around it being the embodiment, if you will, of our hybrid multi-cloud.
Sure.
Right? So I see our HCI system now as, where I might have started out looking like, okay, how do I take, and this is valid, how do I take storage, networking, and compute, tie them together, make it super simple. That's a really important thing, and that's where a lot of HCI focus was. And now we've really moved into this mode of being more focused on, okay, those things are great, but once you do a good enough job that you can almost take them for granted because they're so good, you can move into this hybrid cloud mode where it's not just about running virtualization, it's about how much can we enable you to really leverage the entire public cloud and all of our cloud data services capabilities and go with a cloud-first strategy, and how much can we make the idea of if you need to run anything on-premises, we are going to make that just the simplest proposition in the world. You say how big you need it, where you need it. We put down this system, and you have a new region of your hybrid multi-cloud, and you don't need to know all the details about how that thing runs. You can just leverage the same services you do in public and on premises. And that is a newer concept and a newer enablement that we've put a lot of real work into and delivered proof points about how we're going to make that a reality for our customers.
One of the things that I became more aware of as I've talked to people here at Insight is how strategically NetApp thinks about Kubernetes in the mm-hmm. cloud and the cloud
yeah.
first. For NetApp, Kubernetes is a part of, if I can re-articulate the strategy I heard yesterday,
sure.
Kubernetes becomes a part of how you think about data, right?
Yeah.
How you think about providing a data-centric experience to IT, and that's where you're focusing a lot of your new cloud efforts.
Yep.
How does that translate to what you're doing, you know, with the HCI?
So it does. It is perfectly mirrored on our HCI system. The way I view, so in my role working on the HCI system, I work closely with our cloud data services team, and the important thing is, if I kind of anthropomorphize our HCI system, I'm trying to deliver to the cloud data services team a on-premises version of everything they do that's a push-button experience. So, you know, they've got NKS services, cloud volume services, integrations with all these public clouds across, you know, the Amazon, Azure, Google, etc. All those things that they're capable of doing, the second a customer says, yeah, this is fantastic, but in some cases, I need it on-premises. All they have to do is point our HCI system and say, just put one of those there. All of it runs exactly the same on that, same APIs, same user interfaces, same services. You don't even have to recognize it as being a different system. Like if you go into cloud.netapp.com and play with these services, you can connect HCI systems to it, and they just show up as more regions to it. And that making that hybrid a reality is a really big deal to how we see customers developing new applications and being able to do something that's truly transformative about how they develop applications and how mobile those applications can be. And you're right that Kubernetes is a key technology in there, but there's multiple pieces to it. There's Kubernetes itself, there's cloud volumes as the persistent data for it. There's services that we wrap around those, so whether it's monitoring or backup or other services, because the Kubernetes piece alone just doesn't give you the full infrastructure to do everything,
well,
right?
It's a piece. To me, as let's think about Kubernetes as kind of the kernel, to take a Unix analogy. Kubernetes is the kernel, and NetApp is developing all of this beautiful user space around it that's focused on the problems you're trying to solve.
Well, I haven't heard that. That's accurate.
Yeah.
I think that's a great way to describe that. And you know, it's really a different lens on the whole idea of what an HCI system is than what I thought of them as. Maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I didn't see this lens at all to them.
Right.
You know, I saw them as a infrastructure massively simplified, and now they, to me, they just look like part of a hybrid cloud infrastructure instead.
Oh, it's moving fast.
Yeah,
it's moving
it is.
Fast, isn't it? And on that point, you're an architect, and I know you're proud of what you shipped, but
yeah.
Your job is figuring out what's coming next.
So yep.
Don't tell me any secret product plans, but what are you thinking about? What's got you excited?
No.
To look over whatever horizon you look over.
Not any secret product plans. It's bringing that reality of true application mobility and management to our customers. So instead,
that's a different NetApp. You're not talking
oh my
about
gosh.
Data. You're talking about.
Data's in there, but
well,
no,
sure.
it is so much more focused on this application management. And I think what we have been in the past and who we're becoming, there's this tight tie-in of, right, so we were delivering storage for these enterprise applications. We were really good at doing that. We had all these great data services, et cetera. And as soon as we started transplanting those data services in the form of, you know, ONTAP in the cloud and cloud volumes. That became a key enabler for us to work with new applications and help customers who have those enterprise applications who want to move to the cloud. It was a key enabler for us to start enabling new services around that, the user space stuff of like, okay, so it's cool that we have these great data services and we can move the data, but while the data is super important, you have a real application to run on top of this, and you need help there, and you need help understanding how to move the application between clouds and backing up the application, et cetera. So as we kept building out the services, the data is still so central in there. You know, it has... That's why it has gravity to it, right? Like that term of data gravity. It's an important piece.
Data wants to be next to its consumer.
Right.
Which is increasingly difficult to achieve without some help.
But from this new DevOps mindset and new cloud native mindset, people think of things and manage things as applications, right? They don't want to have to think of the application and the data separate. So we've been building much more tools and capabilities, and you're going to see much more coming from NetApp in the realm of application management, application mobility. And so like the dream, if you will, there that I am excited about us continuing to work on in the, going forward is really enabling that. As developers are building all these insanely cool applications, the more we can free them up to write their new application, and we make everything that's the infrastructure and the mobility and the APIs underneath it as magical as we can for them, I think people are going to see NetApp in a new light. It doesn't mean that we're still doing tons of enterprise apps on storage, of course, right? But so much of our new capabilities and development is in this this cloud native hybrid multi-cloud world, and it's a really cool technology future to be stepping into.
It really is, and customers seem to like it. We've got a nice business.
Yeah, we're getting great feedback from customers and how they're experiencing it, and hearing lots of great input on where they want to see it go. So
excellent. Yeah. Hey, well, thanks for stopping by, taking the time.
Absolutely. Thank you, Steve.
You bet.
So that was Adam. Did you learn anything new, Matt, that you didn't know?
Well, here's my takeaway on his conversation and on the conversation and just in HCI in general. I think there are these very blurred lines between, and you said it kind of before the conversation around, you know, hyper-converged versus converged. And I think at some point those lines kind of continue to blur, or I don't know if blur is the right word, but you know, I think we get caught up in labels and, you know, we forget that, you know, this is about, you know, the scale storage independent of compute, and can you do that, and asymmetrical scaling. I think in the end, none of that really matters. You know, it's just going to be a blob of resources available to an IT organization to provision out to their
terms. Yeah. And hyperconverged has always been, to me, hyperconverged has always been about simplicity of experience, regardless of what's happening under the covers. Mm-hmm. And what happens under the covers, you know, makes a difference to IT. And you know, if everything has to scale together, maybe this is not the best fit for my data center. But I thought he eloquently put it around, you know, it's all about simplicity. You know, he's polished. He tied it into Keystone. If you noticed, he dropped those words in. But, you know, it's about simplicity of experience. And if I'm an IT guy, I want to push button just to have stuff work.
Well, yeah. And that's, I mean, that's, but isn't that really the, whether you're talking about, you know, HCI or CI, isn't that really kind of what this is about? It's about simplifying and automating.
That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. And, you know, the hardware guys are delivering it with HCI. The software guys are delivering it with VMware XYZ or Nutanix. Anyway, the other big exciting thing that's going on is cloud native. Mm-hmm. Cloud native for NetApp is interesting. It doesn't just include cloud volumes, but deeper integration with Kubernetes. And to kind of help explain that to us, we talked to, I really like this guy, Anthony Lai. He's the SVP and General Manager Cloud Native for NetApp. So I'm just going to jump over again, unless you have
something. No, that's going to be a fun one to listen to.
And let him talk about it.
I am the General Manager and Senior Vice President of NetApp's Cloud Data Services Business Unit.
And what's encompassed by cloud?
Yeah, my team is a team of engineers and product managers. And we build software solutions that run on Microsoft Azure, on Amazon Web Services, and Google Cloud Platform.
So NetApp's not just a storage appliance company. You talk about data fabric. How does cloud play into that? How do you approach that market? Right?
It's interesting. I mean, NetApp has, been presented probably incorrectly as a sort of hardware company. The assets of NetApp have always been software. The company's name was Network Appliance. It used commoditized off-the-shelf hardware. Mm-hmm. So the value has always been software. We felt, I think, like many others, that the clouds were going to be very significant platforms for consolidation and innovation. And we felt that it was important that NetApp be there. And so about 5 years ago, George mandated to a group of the ONTAP engineers that they port our flagship operating system from our engineered systems to Amazon. And that took about 2 years. It wasn't easy, but we've done it. And we've since taken ONTAP from Amazon over to Microsoft Azure and now onto Google. So the same enterprise-grade platform for data that people have been running for 27 years on-prem, they can now run with the same confidence and reliability on all of the public.
And this is the same code base that's spanning both your array.
So we deploy it differently. Mm-hmm. We've written, obviously, incremental drivers because we run natively on top of the infrastructures of the cloud. We offer it in two formats. We offer it as ONTAP for a storage admin to extend and do the same things in a cloud they do on-prem. But the really interesting thing is we also have built it as a true cloud service. An always-on, always-available Elastic service. No storage admin required. So now anybody can go into Azure and provision our service because it's a Microsoft service.
Right.
Same in Google. So now, you know, we can give high-performing volumes to cloud architects, site reliability engineers, cloud-native people in about six seconds.
Okay. And how's the adoption of the cloud products relative to?
Well, so it's been going crazy. I'll be honest with you. You know, what the clouds have done, I think, is really captured, the lion's share of this digital transformation that's going on everywhere.
Right.
Every company in the world is sort of trying to be digital. And they perceive that the places that offer them the best chance of becoming digital are the public clouds. So we're seeing, you know, a huge expansion. Really, two things are happening. We're seeing NetApp customers and non-NetApp customers moving to the cloud, and we benefit from both. We're also seeing new buyers coming to NetApp. So our market has expanded both in the sort of in the existing dimension of storage admins, where we're taking share as Dell customers migrate to cloud, HP customers. We're there for them. They're not. The second thing, of course, is because we've abstracted a lot of the complexity away, now non-storage admins can provision their own storage directly from within their own application.
Okay. And storage is just part of the solution. Also under your portfolio is Kubernetes and containers. Right? How do you think about Kubernetes and containers relative to what you're doing with ONTAP? How does it fit?
Yeah, so really we've been, I think, big fans of Kubernetes for a number of years, even before it was open sourced by Google. You know, Kubernetes, I think, has now defined itself as probably the operating system of the future. Mm-hmm. Developers, you know, are being given ever sort of decreasing timelines to release things. People have to move fast. Kubernetes is the platform of speed. If you can decompose an application to a set of discrete services, you can release functionality on each service independently of the other. Kubernetes is the platform to deploy that. Kubernetes was built by Google to be sort of like an enterprise service bus. Mm-hmm. And its architecture was really designed for stateless operations. Now Kubernetes, you fast forward 5 years, and people want to use Kubernetes for everything. Databases, e-commerce, a whole range of services where the application itself has to hold stateful applications.
Well, those stateless routes, though, have led to an architecture that's not friendly to storage.
Right. And so we have, if you want the sort of the bottom line, we've taken our sort of ONTAP asset, and we have ported it into Kubernetes. So now a Kubernetes cluster can, through a piece of open source we developed called Trident, establish persistent volume claims in a shared everything model. So now if a container dies, the state, the data that's in the state persists on our application. So the next container that comes online can take over from where the last one failed. That's not true today in block storage.
Right.
So we've done a lot, I think, to assist the Kubernetes developers, the site reliability engineers, as they choose Kubernetes to deploy more and more applications.
And when you look at Kubernetes and the value add that you're putting on that, is that a cloud-only play? Or is
no,
this also...
yeah, that's a great question. So I think Kubernetes is proving itself to be, you know, the cloud pattern of choice, not just within public clouds, but within private clouds. Uh-huh. And I think increasingly even back into on-premise. And so we are big fans of Kubernetes. Now, we are big fans of upstream Kubernetes. We choose to really deploy and allow our customers to consume pure upstream Kubernetes. We do not change the source in any way. So we allow customers to deploy natively on Kubernetes themselves, or they can use our platform to deploy into EKS, AKS, or GKE. And they can, if they want to, use our service to deploy the cluster and stop using our service. The cluster will still run, because it's 100% upstream.
So the customer's in control.
The customer's in control. And our hope is that when people choose to deploy Kubernetes, whether it's ours or someone else's, that they'll choose our storage.
Okay. So we're at NetApp Insight. It's your big show. You have announcements this week. What's got you excited? What are you announcing out of your team?
Oh, my gosh. There's so many. You know, and as I said earlier in another session, you know, we're entering silly season, right? The next week is Ignite.
Yes.
In a few weeks, we have Google Next London, and then we're all back to Vegas for reInvent.
Yes.
And what's amazing is we have announcements queued up with Microsoft and with Google and with Amazon. So you're going to see, actually, a pretty steady drumbeat of NetApp news coming out over the next 4 to 5 weeks. Here, we've made a number of announcements, enhancements to products, new capabilities of our existing services. You know, the big thing, I think, for the company is something we call Keystone. And Keystone is sort of like it's a cloud-like experience for not just cloud, but cloud and on-prem. So we've sort of, I think, listened to the market, to the customers, and we've seen, obviously, in my business, a strong like for consumption and subscription. And those business models, you know, have distinct advantages over traditional CapEx. So Keystone is really our platform for sort of cloud-centric operations. And so now you can go to NetApp and have the absolute confidence that you can make capacity purchases from NetApp that could be on-premise, that could move to the cloud.
It's push-button decision-making.
It's a push-button decision all based on cloud economics. Bursting, all of the things. It's wonderful for us, and I still, frankly, am surprised we're the only company. We have parity of our platform on the public cloud just as much as we do on-premise. And we make sure that our platforms are consistent. We want to win primary workloads on the cloud, and we want to win primary workloads on-premise. Giving customers that sort of insurance policy to move data between them is, I think, what we've tried to create with Keystone.
And that's what they're asking for. You're seeing your enterprise customers, everyone's deploying multi-cloud?
I think at the end of the day, we're going to look back and cloud will mean a pattern that comprises a technology pattern and a business pattern. And that pattern will be deployed wherever it possibly can be. And the companies that accept that pattern and operate their business around that pattern will be successful.
Your workload runs where it makes the most sense.
Exactly right. And there's no constraint. You can change your mind.
Okay.
And if you want to move your workload around, you should be able to without having to go and renegotiate different terms from different vendors.
Okay. And the channel loves Keystone, I'm guessing. It's a nice
program
for them.
I would say, you know, being in NetApp for the short amount of time I'd had, the one thing I would tell you is the channel seems to have a great relationship with NetApp. And NetApp has a great relationship with the channel.
All right. Hey, thanks for taking the time.
My pleasure.
And enjoy the show.
And you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. So that's the Data Center podcast for this week. Matt, I'm off next week to NVIDIA GTC in D.C., where there are compelling sessions about using AI to control my avionics from Lockheed and things like that.
Ooh.
And then the week after, I'm coming over to your house for the Dell analyst event.
We got some barbecue and podcast, baby. Maybe get some Dell guys on to talk about what's new in their world.
And I think there's some new stuff coming because I was hanging out in the press room at NetApp Insight because those guys are more fun than analysts. And one of them said, for the first time, we're being invited to the fall Dell analyst event. And I said, well, no, as an analyst, I'm offended by your presence. But I think what that signals is there might be some announcements.
Yeah, I don't know. Huh, interesting.
Why else would you invite the press?
I don't know. That's it's very interesting. That should be.
So, you know, you and I are analysts with a capital A. So we read the tea leaves.
We do. We analyze.
So if you know where the press is going to be, you know somebody wants to talk about something.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see. What they have to announce. And if they have it.
Anyway, you keep talking. You're making me late for my lunch. I'm going out with George, and we're going to Panera.
Oh, are you buying?